Good morning, everyone. Thank you for joining us here on Chai Time. I hope you all had a wonderful holiday season. It's been such a long time since we've been at the studio with everyone, and I hope everyone had a great time celebrating with family and friends, and even, you know, some of you all having your own personal time for yourself, which is so important these days. So our last episode of 2023 ended with such a great topic, Science on Gratitude and Empathy. It was very fascinating to learn about, you know, the importance of gratitude and empathy. And if any of y'all want to listen to it, please go on our podcast, which is on Apple Podcast or Spotify, and it's called Chai Time Podcast. So if you've missed any of our episodes for 2023, you can listen to all of them out there. So today we begin our episode in 2024 with another great topic, which is psychology behind motivation. And joining us in the studio, I hope I pronounced her name right. I've been practicing it. Is Arwa Al-Mazaroui and our dear friend who needs no introduction, Matav Muradi, Behavioral Health Project Manager of Ibn Sina Foundation. So a little about Arwa. Arwa is a licensed professional counselor in the state of Texas and a national certified counselor. Arwa is a bilingual behavioral health clinician dedicated to assisting individuals in their journey to overcome obstacles and achieve their goals. She specializes in helping individuals navigate depression, anxiety, grief, complex trauma, life transitions, identity, and cultural issues. Wow, that is all heavy stuff.
Yes.
And people who are on Facebook Live, look at Arwa.
Thank
How
you.
How do you do all of that?
Oh,
wow,
she does.
You're amazing.
Thank you, Lynn.
Welcome to Chai Time.
Thank you. It's great being here.
So today's, you know, topic is motivation. So let's begin with, you know, defining what is motivation first.
Yeah, absolutely. In therapy, we talk about motivation. We talk a lot about kind of like the why of why we do the things that we do. And we use a style of conversation. It's called motivational interviewing. And it aims to strengthen kind of that motivation towards change and also the commitment towards change, because motivation alone is not enough. We also need commitment to make big changes.
So one of the things that we have done at Ibn Sina is actually integrate the change talk or motivational interviewing skills or tools into basically our daily practice. Motivational interviewing skills has been around for many, many years, and it's a therapeutic tool to engage folks in the language of change and commitment and maybe some barriers. Sometimes, you know, it's New Year's.
Yes.
We all want to change something.
Yeah.
Maybe it's something we didn't do so well last year. But why do some of us absolutely never get to the action part of that plan? We all have good ideas, but oftentimes we don't know what to do with those ideas. So what Arwa is referring to is in therapy, assessing a person's commitment versus plan and sorting out those barriers so that we get them more into a kind of the action phase. And once you have them in the action phase, then you can start teaching new habits. You can kind of tie their plan of action to purpose, because we're more likely to sustain a new plan or a new behavior if we believe that it's tied into a core value or a, you know, a purpose that we have. We're more likely to show up for that goal. So it's really interesting, and it's a long process. Arwa is part of my team at Ibn Sina. We are going to take almost 7 months to dive very deeply into those skill sets. So they've already have thousands of hours under their belt to sit where they're at, unless it's deceiving because she's so young and so are the other team members. But it's really impressive to see how they're helping people. And breaking down these complex constructs. Mm-hmm. Because it's frustrating. We get excited about change, and then we fail at what we're trying to change. So sometimes we give up, and it takes a toll on our psyche, mm-hmm. right? If you keep trying something and it doesn't yield any results for you, then that kind of impacts you on an emotional level. So I think change is a very tricky thing, because we're creatures of habit. And one of the things that I assess with even my coaching clients and in therapy is that, why change? Give me some, sweeten up this deal. Why should I leave the behavior I know and that I'm comfortable with, that I can predict, even though that behavior may be a really bad one? I know we ended up last year with me on all the addiction issues, right? So we're very well aware that some behaviors are not good for us. But it takes somebody who is skilled in motivational interviewing to really break it down on, okay, why am I stuck in this cycle? Mm-hmm. And how can someone help me get out of it?
Yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah. And you kind of alluded into this, Mahtab. It's really important to kind of tap into the intrinsic motivation, like those values and beliefs that we hold. How is that related to like that desire for change? How does it underlie that? And then asking like, how are we going to do it when we talk about commitment? So, the plan part of it. So how do we make a realistic plan, and kind of maybe reward ourselves, every time we achieve like a small bit of that plan towards achieving the goal.
Mm-hmm. I like the, you know, Arwa and I are working on a case together because my specialty is relationship psychology. Right. And so we've signed up on a few cases where we can kind of cross over our skill sets.
Yeah.
And it's been fun. It's actually a couple, and Arwa's meeting with each partner separately, and then we're going in as co-facilitators for the couple's work. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And when she's doing her beliefs inventory, she's finding that there are a lot of these core beliefs that are hindering, for example, the intimacy between these partners. So I want you to talk a little bit about like what the husband was dealing with, one of these rigid values where it was hindering his ability to commit to changing and essentially moving close to his wife because it's a barrier to their intimacy and connection.
Yeah. There was perhaps this fear of kind of vulnerability. Mm-hmm. Maybe if I reveal like the vulnerable part of me, I may not, well, maybe my wife would hurt me, then I would be kind of like more vulnerable to being hurt. And maybe she would use that kind of like against me. And so we're kind of trying to work on what it takes to create a safe space between the two partners to kind of open up. And kind of like make those bits for connection and... Mm-hmm.
But you did such a good job with him on breaking down his, you know, it's a cognitive distortion, essentially, of because I believe this, I can't change. And how many times are we in positions in our lives where really our worst enemy is our belief system? Yeah. And we tell ourselves, I can't change. This is just the way I am. Mm. And we lose partners over it. And we... Mm. create distance between us and our kids because we are just hanging on to this fixed idea.
Yeah.
And so it's very important that I think every person should have a baseline knowledge of the psychology behind what motivates you, our belief system, and how to actually change behavior as a result. Because otherwise I personally don't like feeling stuck. And this is something that helps me break that cycle when I feel stuck. I'm like, okay, what's my core belief system around this issue? Mm-hmm. How is that linked to my belief around change? Mm-hmm. Am I being rigid about it? You know, one challenging era of my life was, you know, like after my divorce and changing my mindset around what it means to be a good mom, mm-hmm. and adapting, making adaptation to being like a one-parent orientation versus calculating all my parenting approaches to include a third party. And some of us will play victim to what's lacking, whereas if you get very good at recognizing your own limitations on what motivates you to move, to get out of bed, to do something better for yourself, you may surprise yourself with what you get.
Yeah.
And how beneficial that is.
Yeah. I think like end of the year, you know, in December, we are all motivated. We are all like in high spirits because of the holiday season, yes. and everything else, right? But then come January, everything just goes down because, first of all, it's the weather. Secondly, there's nothing to celebrate.
Where's the parties?
And, you know, you just feel so down. You're in that slump and you can't get yourself up. Mm-hmm. And they do say in January is the hardest time.
Divorces? Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Even you get into depression and everything else because you also have to pay all your bills that you spent last year, right? So
that's depressing. So that is... I put that one away for a minute.
Because I remember, like in Canada, you know, it's so cold, right? And the days get so short and the nights are longer. So, you know, that also, there's no motivation, right? There's nothing like for you to, so what happens then? How do we change that, right? It's like your mind is so, it's just so down there. So, you know, like kind of give us some tips of how we can get back up. Push ourselves up, kick ourselves, wherever.
So you guys know I love puzzles and reflections. Yeah. And actually this kind of weather, like, I should call in sick and just be at home doing a puzzle. But I think when I have these moments, what helps me is revisiting my core beliefs. Like, what am I going to be intentional about in 2024?
Okay.
What belief system will guide those intentions for me? And for months like January, it also falls on my birthday month, so it's very good self-reflection. What did
birthday! I do? Hey. Birthday! Three of us. Are you a Capricorn?
Aquarius.
Oh, okay.
I'm at the tail end of it. But to really kind of capture what do I really want to do? And maybe I've been putting it off. Mm-hmm. You know, I love vision boards, like sitting down with your kids and, you know, bringing all those magazines that taken up all, you know, your room in your living room and cutting them up, saying, like, let's make a vision board about, you know, life and career and work. And then for your kids, that could be school because school is their work, right? Personal, like my daughter says, you know, I'm going to have a glow-up summer. I mean, they have all this cute lingo, right? Like, I want to try three things with my hair this year, or I want to try to go to three things that I'm usually anxious about, but I want to get out of my comfort zone. She spent, by the way, on her off day, 7 hours with another good friend of hers doing vision boards and reflections.
Oh, wow.
To set her, because this is her senior year, so it's very like anxiety provoking year for her. And so things like that, have conversations, meet with friends that are emotionally in tune with you, mm-hmm. and say, what did you observe about me last year? Was I on my off game, or what did I do good from your angle? Mm-hmm. And being receptive to those kinds of feedback. I'm doing a mini course right now called Mind Management.
Okay.
With my leadership class. And because I'm like, we have time management, anger management, we've got every kind of management, money management. But I'm like, you know, let's get away from that we've looked at stuff from growth mindset. We've looked at, you know, what happiness, the pursuit of happiness. These are all very vague and lofty. Mm. How does our toolbox work in terms of any given stress that you give to your mind? How does your toolbox work versus what mine does? You know, and I, before we got into this session, you know, I was telling you it was a very challenging year for me.
Right.
And so part of my reflection was like, how did I manage that? And what did I do well? And where did I drop the ball? Mm. And I felt like mind management kind of captured that. And so I love kind of having these understandings of how motivation works, because it essentially becomes your superpower. If you know how to navigate and understand your motivation, you can be thrown in any kind of chaos and kind of be okay. Mm-hmm. You will not unravel if you understand what moves you, what gets you out of bed, what makes you show up to do a task, mm-hmm. or in your relationships, and you respect your vulnerabilities, you respect your shortcomings, maybe your need for emotional hygiene, or you're, you know, some of us are shy, some of us are super outgoing.
Yeah.
Maybe you need to like step it up in connection. Maybe you need to scale it back to go regroup in your own space. But what does that look like for you? What does that look like for Arwa? You know, it's different, right?
Yeah.
So I see that as a very untapped kind of territory. We don't need a million things to do, to add. Who was it that said their son's like, I don't want to have
Layla
a New
son.
Year's Layla? Yeah, I'm like, good job. I don't need to have a New Year's resolution that I can't follow through with.
Yeah.
That's what that child is saying. It's like, it's been overdone. We go to the gym, the parking lot's full on January 2nd, where you can't get on your cardio machine, and then January 6th, it's as if nothing happened.
Mm-hmm.
But why? Why is that, right? And I want you to talk about the why of the motivation,
yeah.
because when we lack the why,
yeah.
we're going to be the person who doesn't go to the gym on January 6th versus January 2nd.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's the why that we kind of want to tap back into when the motivation kind of lowers. And it's important for us to create this kind of very robust image of what this change is going to mean for us in our life, and follow it through with the plan, like you said. So it's normal. There is an emotional cycle of change. And in the first stage, that's when we're like super excited. And at the beginning of the year, we're like, I'm going to hit the gym. I will eat healthy. I will do all of those things. That's what they call the uninformed optimism. It's the first stage. And then we move to the informed pessimism. That's when we start like, all right, I don't have the time or the money to go to the gym, or my muscles are hurting. We start to see the cost more maybe than the benefit. And then the more we experience the cost of this change, they call that stage the valley of despair. That's where a lot of people quit. And that's when they would stop going to the gym or the healthy new diet they're trying. And a lot of times, you know, the going gets tough. We get there, we stop, and then after a little while, we start a new goal. We get really excited, and we go all the way to stage three, where it gets really tough. However, in that stage, it's really important. Sometimes it's hard to see why did we start all of this. But it's important to kind of take an action every day, even when it's hard for us to see why we're doing it. It's hard to see the benefit. The cost is a lot higher. And then, you know, we keep going. The next stage is informed optimism. That's when we see both. There is a cause. There is also benefit. And the benefit is the reason we're doing what we're doing. And if we're able to follow through and keep going with our plan, then we can find fulfillment and success. And that's the kind of the last stage of that emotional cycle of change.
By then, it's become a habit. So it's become a new norm, a baseline. And typically, our brain learns at around 8 to 10 weeks of something consistent and repetition. Because we learn that way, and we're more likely to retain it. Or if we tie it into a relationship, you know, we hear about accountability partners or people who, you know, commit to walking groups or Zumba classes, or they tie the goal to other relationships, or maybe you have a good friend who can really trash talk you when you're, you know, skipping or making a lot of excuse not to show up for yourself. And that is effective. That's very effective.
Absolutely. Yeah, I love that. And we can also tie the new habit that we're trying to develop to an old habit. So if, say, I'm trying to go for a walk for 30 minutes every day, well, I already drink a cup of coffee every single morning. So if I tie the walk to something that I'm already doing, I'm more likely to kind of get into my new habit.
Or make the coffee the reward, you know, go for a 20-minute walk.
Yes. Always have a reward. Yes. You can look forward to.
Yeah. Well, you know, if you're driving a car that you like and you're comfortable in, you don't want to give up the keys. But if somebody says, hey, let's upgrade, then you'll give up. Then, look, it's time to trade in. So our brain works that way. We like getting rewarded.
All right, so let's just go on a short break. And when we return, we'll continue this great conversation on motivation. This is Chai Time on 103.5 Hum FM. Welcome back to Chai Time on 103.5 Hum FM. We are in conversation with Arwa and Mahtab, and we are talking about motivation. So let's continue our conversation.
Yeah, so one of the things I love about talking about motivational interviewing is it really creates a space for you to have collaboration. And when we were on break, you know, you mentioned some of the tools that you use. I think as clinicians or psychologists, therapists, coach, we shouldn't assume what works for us is going to work for everyone. Instead, we need to be good historians and also get a good inventory of that person's core beliefs and then start deconstructing those core beliefs, especially the ones that are hindering change for that person. And for that to happen, you can't just go walk up to people or on their first session and start tackling their core beliefs. You won't be making many friends.
You'll be so left alone.
That's why relationships are so key. You have to have a very workable relationship with that person and say, you know what, Lynn? I keep hearing you every January, you want to start this business idea that you've been talking about. And I'm wondering what's going to be different in 2024, because it just breaks my heart to see you that excited. And then by March, it just kind of fizzles out, right? As your friend, as your biggest fan, how could I make this more realistic for you this year? Or is this really what you want? Like, oftentimes in a counseling session, first of all, people want to impress their counselor, and nobody wants to seem crazy. So as human beings, we are socialized to filter through the way we report. So creating a safe space so that people can be authentic and really share their stories of when those things are not happening. So then you can offer the tools that maybe can combat that is really key. Because what happens when you underreport or you misrepresent the reality you live outside of the four walls of a counseling office. You're basically the therapist thinks one reality, mm-hmm. you're living another one, right? And then there's just so much missed area, mm-hmm. and there's no communication. So if you're good at establishing a positive, supportive relationship that is non-judgmental, then people are more likely to put their defenses down and give you the true story. And I mean, like, gosh, last Thursday, I was a crappy mom. How many people do you know that could, like, own that? Mm-hmm. You know, I hit, you know, I didn't even hit my own baseline. And therefore, I had guilt. And therefore, I don't know, I had to go overcompensate. And this is what that looked like, right? So how can you help me as my therapist or my counselor mm-hmm. on facing my own truths? Mm-hmm. So if you truly want to assess the motivation and make changes in your life, you have to be honest.
Yes.
I mean, nothing can happen until you can be honest. And then being safe with your provider to say, like, this, I'm messing up. I keep messing up. You know, we don't need to be drug addicts or alcoholics. Sometimes our personality, our approach to parenting, the way we do things, our inconsistencies, they mess us up and they mess up our kids. They throw our spouses into anxiety-driven chaos. Like, we are... I guess more powerful than we like to think, but imagine if every one of us did a good job on emotional hygiene and self-regulation, and so that our messes are contained and we go to the right space to get the help, so we're not damaging relationships. Mm-hmm. We're not hindering our goals. I think that's the fun aspect of therapy, you know. In the beginning, there's a lot of chaos and, well, this didn't work. How do I trust you? How do I know you're the one that's going to fix my problems? And one of my favorite, you know, characteristics, like especially with Arwa was one of our first team members that joined Ibn Sina. She just had this aura of kindness, like she's very ethical. She's always studying, even though she knows a lot, she's so humble about everything she knows. So I'm like, this is the making of a pretty amazing team, starting with someone like her.
Oh, yeah.
Because, you know, that's exactly what you need to tap into authenticity in other people.
You're giving me a lot of cream, Mata. You're being very...
I'm just trying to pay you back for all the free therapy. We need to get Savoy to sponsor these.
All the chai you've been having there.
We need a sponsorship for table 24.
So is lack of motivation a mental health issue?
It could be tied into chronic depression. It could be tied into chronic illness. Mm. You know, imagine living with a medical condition year after year. That will take a toll on your motivation. So that kind of requires a different skill set and approach. You almost want to, you know, like... I remember I had a very committed bipolar patient, and when I used to have a private practice, and we still stay in touch. She's amazing, and I would say, you know, when the depressive cycle of your disease subsides, let's be very intentional about getting a whole lot of stuff done, because we will anticipate the, you know, the valley part of bipolar. Mm-hmm. And so we kind of worked around it. Or she would come in and without saying a word, I said, you went for the fuchsia lipstick. Mm-hmm. The manic is here. So I don't want to get lofty on our goals. Let's just manage our emotions and be safe and minimize risk taking. Mm-hmm. So we had the relationship, we had the rapport to talk that transparent, where she could, and then I was like, yeah, give your money to your dad, because it will be gone. Because you're wearing that fuchsia lipstick. Mm. And I've seen this enough. And so, you know, then she became, you know, she's actually doing amazing right now. But we had a game plan for those times where things may be extra hard for her. So, of course, motivation is tied into our mental health, our physical health, right? You can be motivated all day, but I mean, my dad, he's in a wheelchair. Mm-hmm. He used to walk like, you know, thousands of steps every day. Right. So that does impact you. So what's going to be our saving grace is, again, how we manage our mind and setting realistic goals. Like, you know, you run into this all the time where you have to be so tactful as a clinician when you talk about goals to make sure it's their idea. Or maybe sometimes this comes up in parenting too, right? Who doesn't want their kid to be the best at everything and get everything done?
Right.
But are we being realistic? Are we too lofty, you know? Mm-hmm. And is it about you or that other person? Are you getting more excited about someone else's goal? If there is no agency and there is no, like, purpose, if that goal does not mean something for you, but it means a lot to me, it won't happen. The likelihood that it will not happen will be very high.
Correct. Wow, that's interesting.
Yeah.
Would you like to add something to that, Arwa?
Yeah, well said, Matab. I totally agree with you. We're more likely to achieve our goals when it comes from us, when it's tied to what we want, what we value in life. And also when we talk about goals, sometimes, like, we have two types of goals. Some of them are kind of like approach goals. Some of them are avoidance goals. Like, I'm trying to do more of something or not do something. And whenever it's a short-term goal, studies have shown that having approach goals are more likely to be achieved. We're more likely to follow through with that. Versus the long-term goals, having like the avoidance, but maybe that's better for a long-term goal. And tying the two together. So say I have a goal of maybe reading a book every month to become a better therapist. So being a better therapist is a long-term goal. And then I have the short-term goals that are achievable. I can break them down into smaller steps.
I love that. I love that, because oftentimes we don't think of goals like in those categories. Mm. Are we going to avoid a behavior versus engage in a new behavior? Because both things are very valid.
Right.
How motivated we are.
Yeah.
But paying attention, you know, in our line of work, it's not like I can take a blood test and say your, you know, hemoglobin A1C is improving since the last visit we had. Yeah. So our metrics is in patient narrative. Mm-hmm. Is the patient talking different when it comes to their goals? Are they choosing different words? You know, is there any selection of verbs? So verbs are action, right? Ideas and things that are described. Like, do I get an indication, like, how believable is Lynn's language today? Do I really gauge that she's going to be out there walking 20,000 steps today? Or am I, like, kind of on the fence? Because that's not her baseline. So change talk also induces a new language for people so that they can describe their lives differently. And when you learn how to describe something differently, you always hear, you know, when someone speaks multiple languages,
yes,
they almost act different. You know, like when I'm speaking Farsi, I'm a little bit different than when I'm speaking English or another language. This is the same kind of concept. And people say, something's different about you, right? You talk different. Or I gave a talk the other day to a group, and I said, you know, how you, a woman walks in a room, and we all say, oh, she's had Botox here, fillers here. In my world, when the minute someone opens their mouth, I'm like, oh, they've had coaching. They've had therapy. And I've, over the years, because I'm a lot older than you, I can just pick that up. And I'll go to a party, and I'm like, oh, Lord, no. This one's going to be a work, because
I ain't partying with you, girl.
They're a hot mess. But then I'm gonna go over here and I'm like, I'm gonna vibe. I don't have to do anything here. You know, you start That's picking awesome. Up. Yeah. We have a major authenticity going on here. I told her, I said, she's like, are you nervous? I'm like, no. Why would I be nervous? I'm just meeting up with my friends.
We're just having a talk.
Can I get a note for work?
Now you know why, right? After she met all of us.
Yes.
By the way, we have to do several more sessions on this chain. No, I love that. But language tells you a lot about where people are with how likely they are to make that change, and then how likely it is to stay. That's why self-talk, you know, we hear the vibe around like negative self-talk. As therapists, we have to coach and reteach and disrupt negative self-talk so we can mold the behavior so that we can engage them in motivational interviewing and get work done. And people give up too soon. They go a few sessions, and of course you're going to ask them what's not going right. It's hard. It's hard to be able to like admit to what's not going right for you. And they give up too soon. You need to see the whole, like my thing is at least get 18 sessions in. Like really do the work. Do the homework in between.
Yeah.
You know, and so that's kind of the fun part. Even for us, when you see an individual slowly chip away at bad habits, and it's like a transformation. And then, you know, like whenever I help a guy out or the mom of a family system, I'm like, I think all those kids are going to be better because of this. You know, so even getting anybody in, or you get a cute little kid, maybe they're the black sheep of the family. They're carrying all the symptomatic, part of the system, and you help that kid and they go help a friend at school, or, you know, they give extra hugs to their parents. It's just, it's so catchy, like in a good way, when we adopt this idea of like, I can change and I can be better for it.
So, I came across an article and I wanted to share it with you all where people shared their tips on overcoming lack of motivation. So I want to get your, both your insights on it. So one of the tips was break tasks into manageable chunks.
Great tip.
Yes. Absolutely.
I call that in my lingo, work with the workable parts. And we spoke about that earlier. Don't make the goal so lofty. Like, I'm going to be, like Arwa said, I'm going to be work on being a great clinician this year. Well, you already are, but like you said, you want to learn this EFT techniques, right? That's a general statement. So my role would be like, what does that look like in 1 week?
Right.
What action items can you tie into this bigger achievement, right? What does it look like at the 1 month mark? Is it the number of books? Is it the number of workshops you want to take? Do you want to, I don't know, if you want to learn to be an EFT, do you want to sit in my sessions and clock in this many hours? You want to get folks to get very detailed plan of what they want to do, then they're going to be more likely to follow through.
Right. And it's rewarding
to
achieve the little steps.
Yes.
So, yeah, absolutely.
Okay, so the next one is write down each positive thing you experienced throughout the day. Yeah?
Yeah.
Good tip?
Yeah, absolutely.
So CBT tells us we have the power over our thoughts. Mm. So oftentimes we live in the world, how our narrative works. Maybe it's our depression, anxiety. Maybe we had a very anxious, like rigid parenting, like we were parented that way. Mm-hmm. And so we tend to choose the ideas and thoughts that are more negative. Mm-hmm. And negative types of narratives are very demoralizing when it comes to goal setting and motivation. So cognitive shifting, where you say, I'm going to give my brain an assignment mm-hmm. to select five positive things, five things that are going right in my mm-hmm. life. Over time, our brain is a muscle. Mm-hmm. So you learn, oh, I know a mom says everything will go wrong no matter what, but today these things went right. And then your brain's like, wait a minute. It's not always that things go bad. There are instances where things are going right, and this practice, it's like a yoga for your brain, right? Mm-hmm. So you exercise that part of your brain, and over time, it will shape itself.
Right, mm-hmm. because we tend to talk more about the negative things.
Right.
Things that, if we had a bad day, we focus more on that, right?
Yeah.
Like, we pick up the phone. 20 days, I won't, for instance, I won't call Sasha, and then one day I'll call her, and I'm like, oh my God, I had such a stressful day. And, and it's so automatic, right? It's not like, hey, today I had such a great day at work, and this happened, because we don't think about that.
Mm-hmm.
Anything positive, we just keep it within ourselves, and we are happy. But when it's negative, we're so quick to talk about it and share it. And because we are kind of in our minds, it's like, share your bad days, you feel better, right? But if
or
you share
culturally
your good days,
too, right? In in our cultures, you're almost supposed to always complain. I like to complain when I have like 80% resolve. Because I'm like, I hold a special responsibility, not just because I'm somebody's mom, but I'm taking care of a lot of people's mental health. Mm-hmm. And I do not want to send that message that, I don't know, I want to have resolve. I want to be an example that life happens to me. Like, you guys know. I've had a lot of health issues, like different stressors. Mm-hmm. But I'm like, hey, team, I'm here. I may be at 60%, but I'm letting you guys know. I may have to leave early, but like most of the times I don't. Mm-hmm. But I don't give up on that process. Mm-hmm. And I think that's a good culture, like of our team. Like even you lost your grandfather, and then she was like seeing patients and, translating for the other patients who spoke Arabic. Mm-hmm. And even that action helps you overcome the other thing you're struggling with.
Right.
I love keeping momentum and keep moving. It's okay not to have it figured out. It's okay not to know. Mm-hmm. But being authentic, I've told my friends, I'm like, I'm going to come to your party, but this kind of, I'm not going to be my 100% like bubbly self, but I know your kid only turns one time. So that's important to me too.
Yeah.
So, having an understanding, engaging yourself.
Yeah. Give yourself credit for the small things you do.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah.
Always.
That is.
We don't do that.
Right.
We always think.
Yeah.
Right. And it's really important to celebrate the small success, even when it's in small steps, and kind of savor those moments. And it kind of ties back to gratitude, being grateful for it.
Yeah.
Definitely.
Absolutely. Right? We don't have much time. I have a few, but okay,
pick a big one.
Have some me time.
Ooh, I'm big on that. Self-compassion. Mm-hmm. 9 out of 10 people I meet do not, and that does not mean go buy yourself a new whatever Prada bag. That is not self-compassion, people. Self-compassion. Darn. After this credit card. Self-compassion is a true understanding of the things that make you move, mm-hmm. that make you motivated, and what shuts you down, and then being able to recognize that in those around you, right? Like, what is my limitation that I can't show up for somebody that I love? And do I take the time to go be that person? Do I go take care of my emotional hygiene? Do I go, maybe I'm dropping the ball on my health, right? My sleep hygiene is horrible. And then I'm showing up to work and yelling at my team.
Yeah.
That's right. That is not self-compassion. It's the opposite. So that self-care ties into all of that. But it doesn't mean like you need to go buy yourself a new wardrobe. That's the misunderstanding out there. It means actually sometimes you got to go work on yourself.
Yeah.
Right.
Absolutely. Maybe you have too many things in your wardrobe.
Yeah.
Right.
And you lack connection with the world. Yeah. So definitely that was a good one.
Okay, one more. Be gentle with yourself.
Yeah, we tend to be gentle with others, but sometimes we're hard on ourselves. I see that in the clinic all the time with patients. Like, they would say things about themselves that they wouldn't say about their friend or family member. And it's really important. And it kind of also ties back to self-compassion as well. Yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
That's a great way to end. We could still continue. I have a few, maybe off air.
Yeah, with the self-talk and self-compassion, be careful when you're a mom or in any kind of leadership. You will set the tone, and it's just negative.
Yeah.
Like, don't negate. You know, even in language, when you catch people say things and they insert the word but or do you think, these will all, like, look like you just doubt yourself, and it's not conducive to building self-confidence. It's a whole other topic.
Thank you so much, ladies, for joining us here on Chai Time this morning. It was such a great topic to touch on and talk about, and I'm sure there's a lot more to talk about it as well. So thank you, Mata. Thank you, Arwa. We really enjoyed you here at the studio.
Thank you, Lynn.
Thank you, listeners, for joining us here on Chai Time. We shall see you next week, same time, same place. Signing off, Chai Time 103.5, Hum FM.